Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with some Armada advice. When you overlap another ship during a maneuver, you do not get to change your course when you reduce speed. Making a maneuver at a reduced speed due to overlapping just means you place the ship at the next available lower position on the same side of the tool that has room for its base. However, if that position would require your ship to overlap the tool, it can. This is the only time overlapping the tool is allowed, so plan your course wisely. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the second episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim. At this point in the show, I'd like to go over some of the more recent events that have occurred, either to me or in the general world of Armada. So, this last week I finally got a chance to try out a 400-point list in all its glory. I ran two MC-30s with an MC-80 and Admiral Akbar, along with the Falcon, Dash Rendar's Outrider, and Tycho as my fighter support. My theory was that those three aces could stop or at least delay most fighter swarms if I played them cannily enough. Dash gets rerolls if he's in the thick of things. Han has grit and shoots first to get into position. Tycho can just move around willy-nilly. My opponent took an MC-80, an assault frigate, an MC-30, an HWK, two A-wings, and four Y-wings. We played his contested outpost, and his MC-80 was kitted out as Independence and set the Ys screaming towards my MC-80. Unfortunately for him, my three aces moved almost as fast and started locking them down one or two at a time. Doubly unfortunate for him was that my MC-80 was the Defiance, and it was almost solely due to the huge dice output from its broadsides that I won the game. Neither of us have figured out what the optimal speed is for an MC-30 yet, so they didn't contribute much at all to the game due to being out of position. My current theory is that you need to spam navigate orders on it until it gets to engagement range to help with its slightly wacky turn scheme. However, that double click on the end of speed 3 sure helps set up some nasty broadside work. More research is needed on my aces and MC-30s list. Now last episode, I talked about some basics to keep in mind when you're playing, whether you're just starting out or as reminders for experienced players. This episode, we're going to start off my in-depth looks at the ships and squadrons of Star Wars Armada. First off, the CR-90 Corvette. The CR-90 is the cheapest ship currently in the game, and until recently, the fastest. It is also the most point-efficient for the amount of firepower it can deliver on the Rebel side, which is on par with the Nebulon B, but without the vulnerable side shields. It's still a soft target, though, with only 7 total shields and 4 hull points. The CR-90's nickname is the Blockade Runner, and that's for good reason. Its primary role is going to be that of a skirmisher, the CR-90A remaining at long range to medium range to zap away, and the B will zip in, taking shots, then it zips back out, and both of them are wonderful for swinging around slower ships to get rear arc attacks. It also functions reasonably well as an objective taker in certain missions, but more on that later. You may be tempted to load these up with upgrades, but I think this is a mistake. More than a title, and you're making them less point efficient. And remember, they're really easy to blow up, and then those points just go to your opponent. Let's look at the individual flavors of the CR-90. Both have the same stats and shields. Where they differ is in firepower dice and one upgrade icon, and of course, points. The CR-90A is the slightly more expensive version, and has at least one red die in each arc. It also allows you to take a turbo laser upgrade. This version shines as a points-gathering ship in objectives like Dangerous Territory and Intel Sweep, as with the red dice it can still put some hits out from long range, but also it's a fast, hard-to-pin-down ship for objectives like Most Wanted. I've toyed with putting my commander on it, but I think that should only happen in a list where you don't have another viable choice due to its vulnerability. You'll want to keep it at medium to long range to maximize the balance between more dice to attack with and optimal evade token usage. The best upgrades to put on an A are Leia, to give your higher command ships the flexibility of a one-command ship. Enhanced armaments. While expensive, they make the side arcs of an A just as powerful as its front arc and can be lethal on those dual-arc attacks. Turbo laser reroute circuits are also expensive, but it guarantees damage output with a cost of one of the two evades, which especially works well if the CR-90 is flying too close for evades to matter. Walex Blissex would combo well with the turbo laser reroutes, but otherwise I wouldn't consider him. The Jaina's Light title lets it hide behind obstacles and ships while still getting its full firepower output. This is a huge plus on a CR-90A. XX9 turbo lasers are a nice cheap upgrade, especially if you're fielding Dodonna, but your chances of a crit on red dice are low, so I'd only look at it if you have points to spare. Upgrades to avoid are pretty much everything else. An argument can be made for electronic countermeasures, but they're more points than they're worth on a vet, I think. Another argument can be made for putting Ramus Antilles and Tantive IV on, both for recreating the opening of Star Wars and giving you a free token each turn to spread around. And while that's handy, A, I don't think it's particularly cost-effective since it doesn't increase the survivability or hitting power, and B, remember how the beginning of Star Wars ended up for the Tantive IV and Captain Antilles? And never, ever put Dodonna's Pride on an A with so few blue dice. As a note, yes, I pronounce it Tantive and not Tantive. This is for two reasons. One, there's an actual English word, Tantive, spelled with a Y and not with an E on the end, that means a rapid gallop or ride, which is likely the origin of the ship's name as it's a blockade runner. And two, that's how it's pronounced in the only place I've heard it said out loud, which is the audio dramas. I grew up listening to those in the days before VCRs were common, so bow to my wisdom. Though pronouncing it the other way is acceptable, just acknowledge that you are less cultured and erudite than I am. The CR-90B has nothing but blue dice, so it's going to want to stay at medium range where it can both fire and still get use from its evade tokens. Instead of turbo laser upgrades, it gets ion cannons, which can come in very handy in theory, but my mileage on them varies. The B comes into its own in many of the same ways as the A, just at shorter range. It's still just as fast and nimble, and is cheap enough that with minimum upgrades you can use it as a fire-and-forget missile, assisting with tearing down larger ships and not getting too sad if it's destroyed. Again, don't put too many points on it, or you start to negate the point efficiency of it. The only upgrade that's always good on a B is again Leia, for the same reasons as previously mentioned, and also because you know that it'll always be in range to use her since it's going to be closer to the fighting. The other upgrades are all situational, and as a matter of personal preference, I will hands down recommend the Dodonna's Pride title if you are using Dodonna as your commander. Being able to basically ignore shields with a crit to plop a face-up damage card you choose is an excellent way to whittle down a larger ship, or more than likely do 2 damage to it, again through shields. Even without Dodonna, it's a good upgrade, but the likelihood of getting a useful damage effect is drastically reduced. The others are ion cannon cards. I like the idea of using an overload pulse to soften up a target for a much bigger hit from another one of your ships, but I've never been able to make it work for me. Either I don't roll the crit, or activation order necessitates that I have the CR-90 go after the bigger ship. Ion cannon batteries are both cheap and effective if you're not using Dodonna, and it's an excellent way to ruin a Wolf Yularen using Player's Day. But if you absolutely have to have an upgrade on your B, take the SW7 ion cannons. They're the same point cost, have the same chance of going off, and don't use up the crit effect. NK7 ion cannons do fix one issue of the overload pulse. Activation order doesn't matter since the effect doesn't go away at the end of the round. However, they're really pricey, especially for still having the other issue, that you may not roll that crit. If you consistently concentrate fire, you might go for this and turn your 90B into a defense-stripping machine. I'm going to test this idea out more and see how well it works out. Any other upgrade should basically be avoided with the same caveats as the A. Obviously, either ship type will benefit greatly from using Mon Mothma, and she'll be the go-to for building a Corvette Swarm list. General Ryken can give your swarms a boost by making them stick around for that one last volley before being destroyed, making them vicious little sacrifice machines. Just be sure to avoid Belgarm Iblis, as his ability gives you basically nothing. Corvettes are ships that you'll mostly want to deploy on the flanks, as their speed allows you to swing wide and still engage at the same time as the rest of your fleet. You can send them out alone or in packs, and with the right maneuvering, they will get the job done for you, whether that's sweeping for intel or picking apart vulnerable side or rear arcs. Be sure to move them in to engage at the same time as the bulk of your forces to keep your opponent busy with multiple targets, though. In general, I like to give them nav orders until they're about to open fire, banking one for a speed change as needed. After that point, it's nothing but concentrate fire to get those hits in, seasoned to taste with more nav to keep arcs in, or flee as necessary. But don't be afraid to trade your CR-90 for destroying a larger ship. Almost any other ship will be a trade-off in your favor on victory points. With one squadron value, you're never going to use that order, and the engineering is only going to bring back one shield, so I wouldn't worry about that one either. Unless the vet has Leia on it, of course. The blockade runner is obviously useful in missions like intel sweep or superior positions, where speed and maneuverability are key. But there's a couple others where I think it shines, too. One excellent use of CR-90s is in a list with Most Wanted, where I'll choose it every single time for my opponent's target. It's few enough points that my opponent getting double VPs for it won't tip the balance if it's destroyed, so I can put it out on a flank and try to lure some of their ships out to chase it. If they don't, I'm not worried about losing it, and it's fast enough to change direction to get into the fight. If they do, that's a Gladiator, or an assault frigate, or any number of other ships that they're removing from the combat in order to chase down, hopefully futilely, that one CR-90. I also like it for fleet ambushes. Deploy it at max speed and rocket it away from your foe as soon as you can, but again, you don't lose too much from its destruction. It takes practice, but the CR-90 is a small, inexpensive ship that your opponent simply cannot ignore, and woe to the one that does. After a quick break, I'll switch gears and look at the humble TIE Fighter Squadron, workhorse of the Imperial Fleet. When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com. And I'm back, and it's time to talk about the TIE Fighter. Currently, it's the cheapest squadron available, and while it's weak by itself, the more of them you have, the better they become. Like all Imperial fighters, the TIE Fighter fills a single role. It's an anti-squadron unit. Sure, it's not the best anti-squadron ship the Imperials have, as the Interceptor is objectively superior, and an argument could be made for the TIE Advanced, but it's only one die less in attacking fighters for a 3-point discount, and speed 4 is still faster than anything that isn't an Interceptor or an A-Wing. The TIE Fighter may look on paper like something that should be taken in huge swarms because of the low cost coupled with the swarm special rule, and that's certainly not the worst idea, but I think that isn't playing to its strengths. The more that you take of them, the less likely it is that you can activate all of them with your carrier's squadron command, leaving some of them behind only able to move or shoot. As TIE Fighters don't have the counter ability and only 3 hit points, they aren't something that you want flying in and potentially taking hits before it can shoot back. In my view, a TIE Fighter squadron operates best in minimal numbers as a force multiplier. It should be a cheap accessory to your interceptors, giving them swarm without the extra cost. Yes, they can be killed more safely than their interceptor cousins, but that gives your interceptors another turn to fire with 4 dice if your opponent targets your standard TIEs. Likewise, if they go for the interceptors, they'll likely take 1 hit back for each attack with counter, and 3 blue dice from the TIE Fighters is no slouch in the mopping up what's left after that roll. Regardless of how many you end up taking, you'll always play them the same, running them out in 2s or 3s, or more, to engage and hold up enemy squadrons, especially bombers. You'll want to hold them back far enough so that they'll ideally get the jump with a squadron command, as if they get hit first, high casualties will likely result, making them less effective with the loss of each swarm buddy. Once the time comes to engage, you'll want to make sure that you get at least two engaged with your primary target to get that precious reroll. It's the more the merrier with TIE fighters, and depending on your goal, you may want to spread them out to engage as many opposing squadrons as possible. But if it's an all TIE fighter attack, I would want to limit the number of squadrons that can give return fire after you move in. They may be mostly disposable, but the longer they last on the battlefield, the better. I think it's better to mob kill a squadron or two and allow a couple other enemy squadrons freedom of movement to engage or make bombing runs, then go after them next turn with your still effective mob, then spread out and risk losing enough squadrons to make your TIEs speed bumps rather than a murder cloud. That idea leads us directly into looking at the first of the two TIE aces, Howl Runner. Howl Runner is a truly versatile ace, and one that ends up in most of my lists. As I've said before, Imperial squadrons give synergy to each other, and she not only helps other TIE fighters, but also interceptors, who become five dice with a reroll killing machines when she's around, in addition to adding a die to their counterattacks. Yes, she's expensive, but her scatter defense token keeps her around just long enough in my experience, and as long as you have her hang back from the actual fighting, enemy ships will have to go through your other fighters before they can touch her. Allowing your TIEs to spread out might get them beyond her aura of the extra die, and that is something you don't want to have happen. Since her aura doesn't apply to herself, keeping her back doesn't cost you anything other than a standard TIE fighter attack roll, and gives the benefit of that extra die for future turns. I only rarely have her attack unless she's the last TIE standing or there's easy picking she can finish off. Most often, she's the first squadron I activate on a squadron command, getting her into position so that she's not engaged with the enemy, but the subsequent fighters I send in will both be engaged with the enemy and within distance one of her to get her bonus. The other TIE ace is Mauler Mithil. He's less expensive than Howl Runner, mostly because he doesn't give a direct bonus to other TIEs, and you're likely to get less mileage out of his ability unless you plan for it. His power is really only going to fire off once in a fight unsupported, as you're probably going to want to dive him into the middle of a dogfight to hit as many squadrons as possible. While this maximizes the use of it, it also leaves him engaged with multiple enemy fighters where he will either be mobbed and destroyed, or ignored and just left as a normal TIE fighter since he can no longer move. Mauler therefore combos well with Admiral Shirino, who will allow him to move, even if he actually doesn't move at all, he's considered to have done so, and get in the one damage hits again. He also benefits well from a TIE advanced in that situation to keep enemy attacks off of him. With an advanced tanking for him and his scatter token, he can last a good long while. Remember that since his ability isn't an attack, defense tokens and counter don't work. Conversely, since Mauler doesn't give any benefit to other squadrons like Howl Runner, he is most likely to be the last squadron I activate with a squadron command, so that he can pick and choose his targets for that automatic one damage, hopefully finishing off one or two when he gets engaged with them. In fact, he's a prime candidate for skipping if you have other squadrons you can activate, as he still does his damage when he moves and does not shoot in the squadron phase. If you choose to wait on him until later, be aware that your opponent may have a chance to engage Mauler or fill in the gap you wanted him to exploit, depending on who has initiative. TIE fighters also pair very well with Dengar, or the generic Jumpmaster 5000. Dengar gives TIEs counter and has swarm, making your TIEs into maliciously point-efficient squadron killers, while the Jumpmaster 5000 just adds to the swarm as a tougher buddy. Both of them have intel, which allows your TIEs not to get tied down by enemy fighters and reposition themselves as necessary. This addition makes Dengar amazing with plain TIEs, and the Jumpmaster 5000 an excellent choice if you're looking to save 8 points, which is another TIE squadron. Throw Howl Runner into that mix to give the Dengar or Jumpmaster an extra die due to swarm, as well as making your TIEs effectively counter too, and you have a real beast on your hands for relatively few points. In summary, the TIE fighter is exactly what it is in the movies. Best grouped together, able to be killed rather easily, but if you get a few of them on you, you're going to have to hope for some luck and a good wingman to bail you out. And if there's no other squadrons for them to fight, the 50-50 chance of a hit on a cruiser with their blue anti-ship die isn't too shabby. That's all for this week. Next week, I'll be going over the Victory Star Destroyer for the Imperials and the iconic Rebel fighter, the X-Wing. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. Anything to add, Admiral?
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or email me at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. Please rate the show on iTunes and Stitcher. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.